This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good afternoon, Rutherford County. We're going to have another great day. Of course, anytime Greg Tucker is on, it's always a fun time. And I want to let you know that the first part of our show is brought to you by At Home Care. And they're at 237 Castlewood Drive, Suite H. And everybody knows by now, it's right behind the Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard. And if you have gotten to the age where it's hard for you to take care of your normal task at home, or you've had an illness, you can call 713-4639, 713-4639, and that's Melissa Warren's business, and they will come in 24/7 and make sure that they take care of all those tasks for you, and we're talking about other things. They just want to make sure that you can stay at home and still retain that quality of life. That's 713-4639, or on the website www.athomecaretennessee.com. And Greg is always bringing me new things that are going on in Rutherford County. And we've got a treat for you. The Murfreesboro Symphony Orchestra, they're gearing up for a new season. And they have been around for 30 years. That's amazing. That's one thing that Murfreesboroans should take part in, because it's such a treat to have just beautiful music. And, you know, they're as good as just about anybody anywhere in the world.
Well, this is a top quality product. It really is. I've been going regularly for the last couple of years and look forward to every concert.
And Maestro Joseph Lee will usher in the anniversary celebration season with a first concert on September the 22nd.
This week, Thursday.
Yes. And the concerts take place at the First Methodist Church on Thompson Lane, which is a beautiful venue, just absolutely gorgeous
out there. Right across from the Miller Coliseum out there.
And season tickets are $140. Other tickets are $10, $25, and $40. That's single tickets. And you can call 898-1862, 898-1862, or contact Symphony at MurfreesboroSymphony.com, Symphony at MurfreesboroSymphony.com, to make reservations. And this year they're going to have something different. They're going to have pre-concert programs for.
That's right.
Will that be for the uneducated people like me?
Now, don't put yourself down. I understand you're kind of a fan of classical music.
I love classical music.
Yeah. Joe Lee, this is his first season, and this will be his first. He did do the 4th of July concert, and you know the symphony has done that for many, many years, mm-hmm. done the music for the 4th of July prior to and then accompanying the fireworks, which is always a good show. Mm-hmm. He did that, but this will be his first evening concert as the new symphony director. And the pre-concert program, which will begin at 6:30, and it's a walk-in, walk-around type of program, will include some professional and amateur musicians from this area, as well as some artistic presentations and such. A little bit of a pre-concert carnival, you might call it, right there in the lobby outside the concert hall. And this will happen every concert this season, and we look forward to seeing some of our high school talent as well as some of our local professional talent in these pre-concert programs. I'm looking forward to that. Need to get the concert music starts at 8 o'clock. The pre-concert will run about 6:30 to 7:45.
And we're going to try to get a hold of the maestro, Mr. Lee, on 2 weeks from today, and you will be on with us. And, of course, we need an expert in that field, which I have very rarely gotten beyond Rocky Top. But this is going to be a real treat. And I hope, is there any way that we can have some music here? I mean, a CD or whatever.
I'll talk to Joe Lee, and maybe we can do something like that. That would be That would add to the program a little something different.
That'll be pretty neat. I guarantee you we'll have a lot of listeners that day.
Yeah, you know, I may have a tape of that Warner Brothers cartoon.
Oh, I love that cartoon.
That presented all the classical music from some of the old
Poor Italian. Bugs dies in that one.
Yeah.
I think Elmer brings down the lightning and the thunder. And
right. Yeah. See what? Children are so deprived now with all this new stuff. There's some great old stuff that they really have missed.
A lot of people really don't know how highbrow you and I are. It's amazing.
Yeah,
and we're so educated in a lot of fields.
Yeah. Well, when I first saw that cartoon, I said, that's opera.
Yeah, so it was opera. And in fact, the cartoonist that made up the Looney Tunes, they were quite well versed in operatic music. They really were.
Right.
Now we have had some questions that have been unanswered over the quite a few weeks that you and I have been on together.
Oh,
and
I'm embarrassed.
One of them has to do with your last name.
Yeah, early. I don't know how long it was. Early this year, I think, that someone inquired about the name of Tuckertown,
right,
which is a community. Certainly any of the natives remember Tuckertown. And I had been asked if that was connected with my family. And I denied it out of ignorance at the time. And, you know, now I probably have to admit that I think it probably is. But Tuckertown can still be found. You go out to Nashville Pike, and someone, I'm delighted to say, I built a little business district there, and they call it the Tuckertown Plaza, which gives you the location. It is a community that in my lifetime were trailer parks and kind of a working class neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing that's interesting I learned by doing some better research is that if you, back in the 1800s, after the Civil War, well, even before the Civil War, were hitting from Murfreesboro to Nashville on the old turnpike, the Nashville to Murfreesboro turnpike, which was the first turnpike built in the county, the first toll gate as you were going towards Nashville from here was at what we call Tuckertown, crossing there.
Was that privately owned?
It was, well, it was set up by those who owned the turnpike. Remember, these turnpikes were essentially what we'd call corporate entities today, but there was a board and shareholders that owned it, and they'd set it up. And then they usually would either hire somebody or contract with the local that was there to operate the toll gate. And the individual who was operating that toll gate and also had the store there in that little community was William Tucker.
Mm-hmm.
And he probably was there before the war, but I know the period after the war for many years because both he and his wife lived to be up in their 80s. They operated the toll gate and operated the Tucker store.
You know, he had to have been related to you, been an entrepreneur back then.
Well, probably, but yes, asking around and checking around, I believe he's not what you'd call a direct line, grandfather, great-grandfather, et cetera, but would be over as an uncle on one of those levels. But that's the origin of Tuckertown. He had the two principal businesses, the toll gate and the store. And I understand there was also a blacksmith shop and some other things gathered around in there, a little independent community at the time. And I'm looking primarily at the period of the 1870s. And if you pull out the De Beers map of that period, you'll see W. Tucker in that location.
As much research as you have done on the county, I'm surprised you didn't run across that, because we have so many people that have utilize their time in a positive way as far as researching all the aspects of the county. And then when you have something that's just as simple as Tuckertown, I think I would have been looking to maybe at least find out that they were related to me.
I should have anticipated the question long ago, is what you're saying. As I think we said first time it came up, is I can remember my father saying people would ask him as a child, you know, were you from Tuckertown originally?
Uh-huh. Right.
And because of the the reputation of the area at the time. He usually denied it, mm-hmm. but he really had no idea, and it took just a little extra research. It's a good indication that, or a good illustration that most questions of that sort, if you take the time, the answer's out there somewhere. Mm-hmm. There are excellent records, and it's exciting. Like we talked last time I was on a little bit about William Lytle and his mm-hmm. his donation of land. It's exciting to me to actually hold and read and feel documents that have were actually mm-hmm. signed by those people 200 years ago. Mm-hmm. I came across a spelling difference in, well, it was a son-in-law of Colonel Hardy Murphy, and subsequent documents had spelled the name differently from what I thought I had seen. I went back and found the record and found his signature.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, it resolved that with some finality.
With the two
E's. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it was Hilliard is what we were looking at.
And okay.
And there's a street that was named for him and named by him when mm-hmm. he was doing his subdivision. And the street, is a piece of it remains over near Clark Iron and Metal.
Mm-hmm.
But it's H-I-L-L-A-R-D. Looks like Hillard. And in another place, I had seen it spelled with another I, H-I-L-L-I-A-R-D. And when I ran down the actual deeds that he had signed when he was selling off some of the property there, Hilliard, I-A-R-D, is the way it was correctly spelled. But it'll be forever different on the street because that's the way it was set up.
Now, how active will be the Historical Society in the bicentennial? Because we had the mayor on in the rec department the other day, and they were quite knowledgeable about a lot of the history that, of Murfreesboro in particular. Are you guys going to take an active part in the bicentennial?
Well, yeah, we will be on our own doing some programs over the next, it's called a long year, probably 14 months mm-hmm. Of different activities. We'll have our regular programs every third Monday night, but we'll focus several of them on the bicentennial activity. I have been serving at the mayor's request on two of the there are specific committees that the mayor set up mm-hmm. for different aspects of it. I'm sure that was explained.
Yeah. I think it's about 13.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I serve on the beginnings and the early families groups. And I have also directly provided to the mayor some documentation and information just to help be as accurate as we can. And the society itself, in its on its own name, is preparing a simple document. It's what you could almost call a postcard, mm-hmm. which will have the Murfreesboro timeline
mm-hmm.
and just sort out the different things. Because as you and I have discussed, when you talk about something like a city being founded, there's not a date that you can say, you know, this is the day that it's an evolutionary process.
Right.
And we're going to make that available at the kickoff in October and then circulate it for groups, schools, whatever. Just hopefully, you know, to document some of it, and it'll identify the Historical Society as well as the bicentennial group here in the city.
I'm very impressed with the way the mayor has got the planning going on this because he has experts in every field that you can think of that would mm-hmm. concern our historical events and the people who really made us the way we are today. And it's going to be a great bicentennial period that we're going to go through here.
Although radio is my favorite medium, as you can imagine, I do encourage people, though, to watch Channel 3, the city channel.
Murfreesboro channel, right.
Yeah, on cable, because John Hood is the host or master of ceremonies, mm-hmm. but there will be at least a dozen different talk show format.
Mm-hmm.
But we've already started taping several of them. I taped with John on Monday, and they will focus on these various different aspects of the history of the city. Mm-hmm. And what John is doing is bringing in people who, through family stories or direct experience, can talk about the lore in the history. Mm-hmm. And I was on a, let's see, Jim Roberts and Ransom Jones mm-hmm. were on with me. And of course, those two families go way, way back, almost to the beginning. Mm-hmm. And they were telling stories about you know, what they had heard from ancestors to ancestor to relative on down. And I had a good time kind of trying to interject some facts in among the lore as we discussed it.
So some of what they were repeating was actually Western lore, and then you were bringing in the facts. But of course, we all know that
the
you
Western
print
lore.
The lore instead of the facts. Right, that's what you're supposed to do.
Now, the stories always give color to the history.
Yeah.
And I hope people appreciate in my writing, I'll try to include those stories along with the facts, because that's what makes it interesting.
And of course, you have John Hood there, who never forgets anything. And of course, he's lived a lot of that history here in Rutherford County.
He has. I didn't realize he was an octogenarian until recently. He's been around a good while. Probably the nicest guy in the county, too. Present company. Yeah. Not included.
Yeah. And you don't find many octogenarians or whatever they are back here.
80-year-old.
Yes,
Bill.
I know. Bless his heart. And he doesn't look it. And he's, I tell you what, I still think of John Hood as a young man every time I run into him. It's amazing that he still has that great attitude and the memory, and he still looks great. I mean, he was over at the Middle Tennessee State Dairy at the groundbreaking the other day. And I tell you what, he never misses a beat. I wish I was that sharp. I really do.
Sharp he is. He's one of those fellows that can walk through a rainstorm and plow through the muddy parking lot and come in looking like he just stepped out of a fashion magazine.
Exactly.
Always clean and neat.
Now, we were mentioning MTSU, and there's one thing that people who are known around this community, like Bob Lamb and others like that can't seem to get a hold on where the term blue comes from for MTSU.
Blue Raiders.
Right.
Yeah. In fact, Bob Lamb brought the question up in an email to me not long ago. I hope he's listening. If not, I'll get email back to him. Like we were just talking about, the name and the traditions at the university have evolved over time as well. And we all know the Blue Raiders now.
Mm-hmm.
The blue came out of the earliest traditions when it was first set up as the normal school back in 1911. They chose the students in vote of some kind, chose blue and white as their colors.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no consensus as to what kind of a, mascot or name they would use. Mm-hmm. They were all teachers, normal school at the time, trained only teachers, and they used the name pedagogues, which nobody liked for a mm-hmm. while.
Who would like that?
Yeah, and they call themselves the Blue and Whites, which is a little awkward. And as you read through the literature, they kind of settled into teachers. And in the 20s and the early 30s, they were called the teachers.
Hmm.
Now, where some confusion arises is Homer Pittard, who wrote the book that I enjoy referring to regularly, The First 50 Years, the first history, 50 years, first 50-year history of the college, picked up on a newspaper article. And, of course, he was around during that period, but he relied on a newspaper article that appeared in the Daily News Journal in 1934. Now, you had to appreciate some context here. If some of my regular readers know, I've written recently about there was a real intense conflict between the university administration, those who control the university,
mm-hmm.
and a certain element in the local community, which was the Daily News Journal in large part, one of two newspapers at the time. And what Homer reports in his book is that the newspaper conducted a contest to come up with a better name for the teachers. And the winner of the contest, as declared by the newspaper, happened to be one of the football players on the team. In fact, the next year he was the president of the student body.
Hmm.
And he proposed the name Raiders. So in the midst of the 1934 football season, which was an absolute disaster for the team, the Daily News Journal announced that they've selected this new name. It's the Raiders.
Mm-hmm.
And since the colors before had been blue and white, it should be the Blue Raiders. Well, stop and think a minute. What kind of authority did the Daily News Journal have at the time to tell the university what was going to be the name of their team and what the mascot was going to be?
Well, now just think about it. We just had Citizen Kane that was on Turner Classic Movies just a day or two ago.
All right.
So that seems to be, it's always been there. Newspapers always have tried to wield their authority.
Yeah, arrogant might be one word for it.
But, right.
Well, at the time there was a change of coaches. The coach, I believe it was Falkenberry, mm-hmm. died. And Floyd came in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now I'm speculating a little, but I think Floyd probably was very well aware that his boss, President S.P. Lyon, was not at all warm to the Daily News Journal. And Ned Carmack, who was the publisher at the time.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, in 36 and 37, Carmack headed an effort, which we've written about and discussed a little bit, to get rid of Lyon,
mm-hmm.
and literally called upon his political allies to get Lyon out. And they were trying to put in Knox Hutchinson, who was an ally of Carmack and others, mm-hmm. at the time. So certainly during that period, a new coach is not going to come in and say, I like the name that the Daily News Journal has proposed, mm-hmm. and allegedly come up with through a contest.
They were kind of hurting for things to tell about back then, weren't they?
Yeah, as I say, the football season itself was a disaster, and it's fun to read because the Daily News Journal announces that this is going to be the new name, in their opinion. And I guess what they were saying is, we're going to use it in our reporting. The Rutherford Courier ignored it completely. But they came up with it just before the last game of the season, which was the Thanksgiving Day game against Tennessee Tech. Mm-hmm. And in 1934, Tennessee Tech blew the poor teachers away. In any event, if you look at the 1935 yearbook, there's absolutely no mention of the name the Blue Raiders. You look in 1936 at the reporting on the team and the yearbook, nothing about the Blue Raiders. 37 and 38, which is about the time or is the year that President Lyons announced that he was going to retire and step mm-hmm. down. And shortly thereafter, Q.M. Smith came in.
Mm-hmm.
Floyd, the coach, apparently decides it's time to have another name. The teachers just doesn't come across as...
Not when you're a football team.
As a fighting
team
name.
Yeah.
And in that season, 38th season, they became the Blue Raiders. And he actually picked up the name that had been pending. And probably some of the sports people around town had, begun to favor the name. So then in 38, you see the name actually come in. And but the Blue Raiders was abstract. Mm. There was no real connection with an image of any kind. And
it's been alluded to that it relates to many times to the Confederate forces, the Raiders back then.
Right.
But there really wasn't any connection at all.
Not in its origin.
Right.
And in fact, I can remember as a child thinking, well, they talk about the blue and the gray in mm-hmm. the Civil War. How could you have Blue Raiders,
mm-hmm.
the Nathan Bedford Forrest's, Raiders,
mm-hmm.
didn't wear blue.
No.
But again, under Q.M. Smith, 39, that would have been 38, 39, and another coach, a new coach, Wink Midget.
Yes. Knew both his boys and knew him. He was one of my baseball coaches.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, he was my father's coach when mm-hmm. my father played football there. And there's a building on the campus now with his name on it. Wink came up with, you know, he was an admirer, as many were then and are now, of Forrest, and knew the history of Forrest in Murfreesboro. And he thought that was the ideal connection. And apparently Q.M. Smith agreed with him. And that's really where the connection came, because Q.M. Smith was remembered the phrase attributed to Forrest one time. Sometime many years after the war, he was interviewed. And they said, well, why were you able to be, you know, so effective? And he said, because I got there first with the most. And this appealed to QM, President Smith, and he made that first with the most part of the credo of the college and the teams at the time, and adopted Nathan Bedford Forrest and his image as the mascot logo of the school. So it all evolved, and that kind of answers questions like, why are the Raiders blue rather than gray? And, you know, just where did the name come from?
Well, you think about it, football is like you're in a battle. I mean, it really is. I mean, the coaches are the generals. And it's just one of those things that that would be the perfect example of what you want to have when you've got a good football team.
Well, you remember also that about that time they changed the name of the college. It had been State Teachers College, and it was in the early 40s under QM and Wink Midget. And, you know, what was the second choice for the name of the new school? It was Wink's first choice. He thought it should be Forrest College. And you go back and read, you can see him arguing as to whether to call it Forrest College or to go with the Middle Tennessee designation.
Yeah, I can't imagine a football team going out and being called the Teachers. Cause I guess you would bring your erasers and your paddle and stuff like that and ready to go to war. I don't know.
They actually were a pretty good team from time to time, but not because of their mascot.
Want to let you know that the second part of the show is brought to you by Stan McNabb Automotive, where they provide quality vehicles from Chevrolet, Dodge, Jeep, Ford, and Cadillac to the Murfreesboro, McMinnville, and Shelbyville, Tennessee area. Their large selection ensures that you can have a vehicle for everyone, no matter what it is you're looking for. And for a quality used car in Tullahoma, visit their dealership located at 2000 North Jackson Street. They have a large inventory of pre-owned cars, trucks, SUVs, and minivans to select from. And one of the things, and we've mentioned this before, and this is the big one, you can have tires and oil changes for life of that vehicle. And I don't believe you can get that anywhere.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic is more than just a clinic. It's the doctors you can trust, a technician you can believe in, and a staff member who goes the extra mile. From the time someone walks in our doors, the difference becomes evident. All of our resources are used to improve the healthcare experience of our patients, and we have been a part of Rutherford and surrounding counties for over 60 years. Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
Hello, this is Ron Harper with the Minerva Drive Church of Christ. Are you looking for answers to life's problems? Come and join us this week through Wednesday night for our fall revival meeting. Our speaker will be Keith Parker from Hendersonville, Tennessee. The times will be 7 o'clock each evening. Come and hear a message from God's Word. I'd like to invite you to our fall revival meeting. Our address is 1115 Minerva Drive in Murfreesboro.
Hello, this is Jim Bryan at First Bank.
And I'm Chuck Lewis. First Bank presents Good Neighbor Events, news of what our local schools, churches, and community groups are doing.
It's Tuesday, September the 20th, at 5 to 7 the evening on Main Street, in the beautiful home of MTSU President Sidney McPhee and First Lady Liz McPhee. This is a fundraiser for the Murfreesboro-Rutherford County Main Street Renovation Program. That's 5 until 7 tonight at the MTSU President's home. And you've heard us talking about this one. At 7 o'clock tonight and tomorrow night, the gospel meeting continues at Minerva Drive Church of Christ. The guest speaker is Keith Parker. That's 7 o'clock tonight and tomorrow night at Minerva Drive Church of Christ, 1115 Minerva Drive. At 8 o'clock tonight, a free recital at MTSU's Wright Music Building. Lee Wang is featured on piano. That's 8 o'clock tonight. And the art show continues in the rotunda of the Murfreesboro City Hall. That's going on through October the 14th. And that's Monday through Friday from 8 in the morning until 4:30 in the afternoon. And Recycle Rutherford and the Rutherford County Solid Waste Department are encouraging Rutherford County students to recycle phone books now through October the 24th. Now listen closely, students and teachers. Each set of 10 phone books turned in earns a Class 1 entry in a drawing for $200 in cash. 14 classes will earn the prizes, and the winners will be announced October the 17th. There are 4 phone book collection sites. We'll tell you about those later. And the Middle Tennessee Civil War Roundtable meets at 7 o'clock tonight over at the Heritage Center on West College, right behind Marina's Restaurant. That's 7 o'clock tonight. And those are WGNS Good Neighbor Events, brought to you by First Bank.
Weather Eye.
Mainly cloudy this afternoon with scattered showers, possible rumble of thunder. Temperatures hold fairly steady. Tonight, chance of showers and storms, low 63. I'm WGNS meteorologist Laura Lockwood. Right now it's 75.
Hey, this is Tom over at Kirk & Burt's. Today's special is our barbecue sandwiches for $1.50. You can add a piece of homemade pie for a full, healthy meal. Kirk & Burt's, 517 Cason Lane, just past the theater. Or call in your order, 893-FOOD.
Hi, I'm Dr. Michael Jordan, an orthopedic surgeon with Middle Tennessee Medical Center. As the official health care providers of the MTSU Blue Raiders, we know the importance of getting players healthy and back in the game. Middle Tennessee Medical Center provides comprehensive orthopedic care with expertise to return each patient to an active and functional lifestyle. Our team is highly experienced in orthopedic and joint replacement surgery, which means better outcomes and quicker recoveries. To make an appointment with an MTMC orthopedic specialist, call 615-284-BONE.
It's the Truman Show, a look at the people and news shaping Rutherford County with Truman Jones.
Today's guest, Mr. Greg Tucker.
Sausage and biscuits, gravy and grits, home ground, homemade, it'll get you fits. Blueberry pancakes and corn cakes too, I'm a-licking my lips, now how about you? Read it for me.
And you're listening to John Blankenship and Friends, and we're talking about Avant Lane, Saver, and Ken Pazell. And before I go in, Father, I do want to mention Billy Yearwood. I ran into Ken and Sarah this last weekend, Greg, and they just celebrated their 63rd wedding anniversary. Can you imagine that?
Congratulations.
Yeah, and Sarah said that she was 4 years old when they got married.
Yeah, I'm sure that's correct.
Yeah, it is. And I said, my goodness, you know. And then we're talking about the readable mill, and that thing, it will be 200 years old next year. Uh-huh. And I did not get to go out there. And if anybody's wondering where it is, it's about a 10-15 minute drive down John Bragg Highway. Turn left where you see the sign. It's about a 2 mile drive, and you'll pull into a place that is a fully working mill. It's been restored by Tom Brady. Absolutely gorgeous place. And you'll go back 200 years in time to a quieter, more peaceful time, in a time where you can really enjoy yourself. From 8 a.m. to 1 p.m., you'll enjoy some of the best food that you've ever put in your mouth. And if you'd like to call them, 563-6455, or you can pull them up on the internet, readablemeal.com. And unfortunately, I did not make it out last weekend, but you did.
Well, we appreciate your support for the Kittrell Volunteer Fire Department. That's also a pretty good breakfast out that way. It only happens once a month.
I want to make sure the meal doesn't burn down.
That's true. They would be the respondents, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, I was there. This time I had the banana pancakes.
Oh, I love those.
And, yeah, very good. And I had some visitors from Paris, France. We took them out there. And the one thing they couldn't believe was that it was only open one day a week. Because they saw
that's hard for me to believe too, Tom. Yeah. If you're listening,
yeah, because there was a crowd and the food is good and the music was going on through the whole time we were there, and it's just a lot of nice place to be. We ought to mention, too, that the facility, the mill, and the facilities there can be, I guess, rented for special occasions.
Especially
during the
weddings.
Week. They have a lot of weddings there during the week. But as I've said before, when we have people visiting from outside the area, I always like to take them there because they quickly get a feel for not only the physical surroundings and what it was historically, but they're nice people there, and they're always people you know, and the atmosphere is always friendly and warm. So
now, while your guests from France were there, did John Blankenship play the can-can, and did Norma demonstrate how it's done in the Riedel area rather than the France area?
We asked them to keep it local. I felt they should be exposed to more of the local, but we did go down and stand and watch. And the immediate first question from Renaud Vitrac
that
was the fella, his wife's name is Anique. Mm-hmm. The question was, pointing over at the harmonica player, why he had
that's Ken Frizzell.
Yeah, Ken. Why he had to have so many? Because he's sitting there at a range of about 10.
He has 10.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I told my French visitor that they kept filling up as he was. But Ken straightened us out and explained about keys.
It's hard to believe. You look at the harmonica and you think all the keys are in that one harmonica, but that's not true. Each one has a different key.
I guess so.
Well, that's what he told me.
You. All right.
They didn't ask what happened to the river as it flows into the mill, where it would actually keep the mill working.
Renault did go over and looked for the mill race because in the French countryside, they also use water power.
Mm-hmm.
And he went over and looked, and kind of I saw his eyebrows go up, and I told him that no, the mill race had not been used for Lord, I don't know how many years.
Mm-hmm.
But you mentioned that we might someday actually see the wheel turning on water power.
There is some things going on right now that people are trying to, and Joe Nunley Jr. is going to be on my show again. Hopefully I can get him on next week, and maybe we can have one of the engineers that is really interested in maybe getting the water flow changed, getting the dam changed around, and getting the water flow back through where it used to be when the mill was first operational. And, you know, I would love to see that, and it would be great for everybody. I mean, people, when I was young, I remember when that water flowed up through there. I mean, it was just an absolute gorgeous play. Of course, it still is, but now you look, I guess if you say, beside the mill, maybe, or in front. I don't know how you would put the directional flow there, but there's no water flow through there.
Right. The old mill race or mill run is there. It runs on the east side of the river, parallel to the river. Has its own. Does it have a separate bridge? I think it's got a little underpass anyway.
It's got a little underpass there.
And
well, it's kind of
It comes up right in line with the mill and. It looks like it would take some real effort, but knowing what Tom Brady has already done out there with that mill, I'm confident that if there's a way to do it, and I'd love to stand there and see that water flowing again, that big wooden wheel turning.
So we have another task for you, Tom, if you're listening today. And that would be another service to the community, both in Rutherford County and in Cannon County. And, boy, can you imagine? He would have to enlarge his parking space at least twice as much now as he has, especially if you were to go to 7 days a week. Can you imagine what he could do?
If the mill run starts flowing again, I mean, he's got to be open on Sunday.
Yeah.
At least.
Yeah.
Sunday brunch or Sunday dinner, something like that.
Well, it's kind of like, a newspaper. You want your newspaper to be more than one day. So, you know, I wouldn't mind going to I'd probably go there 7 days a week almost if they'd open it up. You know, I can't really promise him I'd do that. But you know, the changes that we have seen, I mean, a lot of times we'll go back just like the Riedel Mill, and we want to embrace that. But we have seen some really positive changes, like in the Hoss Hill Pike. I mean, you and I remember the Hoss Hill Pike was probably the most dangerous road that you could exit and go into Murfreesboro. And now I was out on it the other day and went out as far as the Guy James Road and went out to the new dedication at the MTSU Dairy. And I'm amazed at how much that area has changed simply because of all the work that they did on that road. And I know that Bart Walker had a lot to do with that because he and I constantly talked about, you know, the danger of going up that mm-hmm. road. And it really wasn't fair to the citizens who lived out there because there really hadn't been anything done on that road in years.
There's some really pretty country as you go on out that way, mm-hmm. and with the improvement in the road, I suspect when the building economy and all begins to pick up again, as I'm sure it will, that's going to be some very attractive areas out mm-hmm. there.
There's a lot of history to that area.
A lot of history out that way, and it's one of the older roads. It was originally the Murfreesboro to Liberty Turnpike. And there's one little side road out that way called Hogwood, H-O-G, mm-hmm. Wood, Hogwood. Mm-hmm. In fact, some of your listeners probably remember Bobby Modrell coached at the Central High School.
One of my coaches.
Yeah, one of your coaches.
Freshman, yeah, yeah.
He was also quite a star in his own right.
He's a great tailback.
Early 50s at the high school there. He lives on Hogwood, and I always thought, gee, what a terrible name, yeah. Road, and it must refer to the woods where the pigs ran. And then I pulled the old charter for the turnpike. Mm-hmm. And darn if one of the charter members of the Turnpike Corporation was Mr. Hogwood.
That's a new one on me.
Yeah, and so the road is named for an individual, Mr. Hogwood, and one of the early settlers out that way. And apparently somebody with a little money, because you had to buy your way into the corporation in these mm-hmm. turnpikes. And perhaps the Hogwood Farm was right there where the Hogwood Road is. And those are things that are fun to try to figure out.
Now, you and I were talking earlier. They're going to have some type of celebration or get-together with individuals who are from that area. You know, like Kittrell just had their big reunion.
Yeah, this Saturday. And I'm sorry I can't list off all the family names, but at the church about halfway out to the county line, the old church there that's been there since the beginning, I guess. They're going to have a reunion and presentation of descendants of some of the earliest families. I know Wright's one of the names, probably Hall is one of the names, maybe Hogwood's one of the names. They sent me an invitation. I'm going to try to make it. It is from 10 to 1, and the enticing part of it is at noon there's going to be a dinner on the grounds.
Hmm.
I'm glad to see the communities like that around the area taking a real interest in their history and bringing people together to focus on it. And hopefully there'll be some documentation. And part of what they usually do at these is the families bring, the family Bibles or things like that, mm-hmm. so you can get a sense of who's been there. But I know the Wright family goes way back. For a while, there was the Wright Mill there. And then in the 30s and 40s, some of the most interesting characters in the county were some of the Wrights. They talk about the Wizard of Hall's Hill, who was generating electricity and had electric lights on his own out there back in the 30s before anybody else had electricity out that way.
Now, did you run down the history of why the road was named Hall's Hill, or that community was named Hall's Hill?
I have not. That's something
I am disappointed.
Well,
I can't believe I finally found something that you did not know.
Well, we'll get to it. We've worked out Tuckertown. I suspect I can name three or four people. Dalton Stroop and
I bet he knows.
And the Kerrs.
Yeah,
they can tell you. It seems to me that the store there at Hall's Hill may have been in the Hall family or something, although at one time Spy Kerr's father, I know, ran that store. But I'm not sure who married into what there. We'll sort that out.
I was trying to remember what that area was called where the Kerr store was. It was
well, now another community name out there is Sharpsville.
No, that's not where I'm going. It seemed like it was Cedar Snag. Cedar Snag, was it? Now, did you research that?
Cedar Snag. That's Cedar a new Snag. One. I mean, is that out beyond Hall's?
It's out about where the Kerr grocery was and that area right there. And, you know, it's funny. I guess you probably go into the county court clerk's office every once in a while and pull up those old maps. A lot of people don't realize it, but there were different little communities within the community back in the early days of Rutherford County, and they would list families that would live in those areas, and that's how you knew where to go because of the name of the families back then.
If you read some of the read any of the newspapers from back in the first half of the 20th century, they had correspondence in many of those little communities, and once a week there'd be a section in the newspaper as to who visited what family and who came in for dinner and who's had a birthday, and just very much local community news. And I think, first off, it was good for that community, but also I think it gave everybody around the area a sense that there are these communities, and they have their identity and their activity. And, of course, back when we had the schools in those communities, the rivalry was intense. And if you ever read about the old baseball rivalries when each community had its baseball team, and boy, that they took that very seriously.
Oh, they did. And on the 4th of July, I know they still do that at Rockvale, but on the 4th of July, every community in Rutherford County would have a baseball game. Right. And it would be, say, Walter Hill against Christiana, Kittrell against Las Casas, or whatever. And I used to go to those games when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I had rather sit there and watch that game there almost as much as I would a major league game, because you're right, it was intense. And they did, they may break the rules a little bit every once in a while.
Well, you can see what was at stake there. Bragging rights for a full year.
Yeah. And a lot of times that would be the only time that they would play that team. You're exactly right.
Right.
But you know, I often think about what it would be like or been like if Kittrell and Las Casas and some of these had football teams back then, because you can imagine how intense just a baseball game or a basketball game was. And I had Coach Rick Insel on the show yesterday from MTSU, you know, one of the brightest, best coaches in the United States, and really has MTSU going to the highest level. I mean, they really are. They're going to win the national championship one of these days. And they're just been a step or two away from it. But just listen to him talk about the rivalries that they had here with Woodbury and some of the local areas where they would play against each other. And then Shevel, of course. Well, he took Shevel to an absolute another level. I mean,
right. They all over the country, they know about the Shelbyville girls basketball.
But all that used to dominate this area. It really did. And sometimes I long for that, and I long for the closeness of each individual section and the people from there, because when you mention a name, you automatically thought of, say, Smyrna or Las Casas Laverne or whatever. And we used to have local papers, and there still are some. I mean, you have the Cannon County Courier, Eagleville has its newspaper, and some of the smaller communities. And I can sit down, believe it or not, I can sit down and still enjoy those newspapers when I get one. Bobby Parker, my barber, he gets the Cannon County Courier all the time, and I love just to sit there and read it and see what's going on in the community, and it just brings back memories to me. And I wish we had something like that here.
Well, we got the Truman Show.
Yes, yeah.
And I do believe that.
And the Greg Tucker Show.
I do believe you stir the memories very effectively.
Actually, I wish I could stir them. No, I don't. I'm glad I have you as an asset, and some of the other people from the Historical Society. And we have so many people that come in here, they're just like books with legs on. As soon as they come in here, they open up and start relating all that knowledge back to the people here of the things that they really need to know. I kind of wish sometimes that we could take some of this, or maybe some of the schools in the, say, the K through 8th grade, or even higher than that, and let them hear some of the people that come on and relate how this community used to be, because it would be fascinating.
Well, I do know that there are tapes of most of these shows, and I hope they'll be archived, because 50 years from now, I suspect there'll be someone like me who'll be plowing back through the archives looking for information. And obviously a lot of this is anecdotal, but that's where you start. You know, you pick up the stories, the anecdotes, the folklore, the family lore, I call it, and then you go to the records, and it's not only fun, but I think it's very meaningful to begin to understand, really, this is how we got to how we are, and it tells you something about how we go forward from here. And one of the points I was making in the taping we did the other day is when you look at how Murfreesboro came to be, it was a real struggle and some real competing interests involved there. And as they would move from one step to the next, the coalitions, you might call it, that had been competing would fall apart and then reform, because the interests would shift. I mean, first it was, we have got to convince the legislature that Jefferson's not a good county seat. Well, when they managed to do that, then it was, well, where is it going to be? And you see the groups fall. And then the ultimate conflict between the families, the Lytles and the Murfrees, as to, you know, who was going to get what from the new arrangements. There's that struggle. And when you begin to understand, that's the way things happen. People have different interests, and they have to lobby and work. And some interests are frustrated, and others are satisfied, and that's how we move forward.
Could you imagine if they had combined all of that power they had here in Murfreesboro? There's no doubt in my mind we would be the state capital, but would we really want to be the state capital?
Well,
I'm very happy that we turned out the way we have.
I like our agrarian history. Yes. It would have been different if the capital had ended up here.
I want to let you know that the last part of the show was brought to you by Pirtle and Howerton Automotive at 2006 North Main Street in Shebaville, Tennessee. And you can reach them at 1-800-264-6800, toll free. And if you're looking for a Ford, Mercury, Chevrolet, Buick, or GMC, take about a 15-20 minute drive down 231 South towards Shebaville. And on your left, before you get into Shebaville downtown, you'll see Pirtle Howerton there. And that is one of the nicest places to stop on your way to Shevel. If you're going south, or if you're just going there looking for a vehicle, go in, have a cup of coffee with them, enjoy the morning or the afternoon, and on your way back, you're going to enjoy it even more driving in your brand new car.
If you want to get some barbecue, I tell you how to do it. Head for the Slick Pig and you're into it. Just walk through the door at 1920 East Main and your nose will send a message right to your brain.
Now at Slick Pig Barbecue, try the Catfish Special. Wednesday night between 4 and 8 o'clock. $9.99 plus tax for all-you-can-eat catfish. The meal includes hush puppies, white beans, and homemade coleslaw at Slick Pig Barbecue.
My name is Tim Schott. I'm the founder of Bondware.com. Does your business website work as hard as you do? Bondware gives your business the tools you need for an online presence. We offer a variety of services such as bulk email marketing, e-commerce solutions, and custom web design. Bondware is located on John Wright's Boulevard, just past Sam's Club in Murfreesboro. Give us a call at 333-7775. Our packages start at $25 a month. Sign up for a free trial on Bondware.com and use promo code RADIO for $50 off your initial setup cost.
He knows Rutherford County as good as anybody. Truman Jones. It's the Truman Show here on WGNS AM and FM.
Well, this has been a real quick show, and it always is when I have Greg on. It's so interesting. I just have to sit over here and just listen and enjoy it. I do want to let you know that the first concert of the Murfreesboro Symphony Orchestra will be September the 22nd. and it'll be back to basics and the music of Mozart and Beethoven.
Beethoven, the fifth. Da-da-da-da.
Oh, I love that. And what time will it start, Greg?
The concert itself will start at 8, but don't forget the pre-show, the program before, which will start about 6:30. And it'll be walk in, walk around until about 7:45, and then we'll all settle in for the concert.
Now, one thing that most people will be wanting to ask, the men especially, do they have to wear a bow tie and a tux?
No. At most, it's business casual.
Okay.
Business casual. And
if you don't wear a tie, will they throw you out?
No, you know me. Do I wear ties?
No.
And I'm one of them that is there regularly.
So enjoy yourself. And tomorrow, which is Wednesday, let's see, who do we have on tomorrow? Oh, my, we have Kent Seiler and Jim Williams, and we'll be talking about the Gore Foundation tomorrow. Going to be a great subject.